and welcome to the first MJA podcast for 2019. My name is Kate Swanell, and I am the Journal's news and online editor. Today we're digging into research about the drinking habits of older Australians and why we need to be concerned, particularly about the baby boomers. Professor Anne Roach is Director of the National Centre for Education and Training on Addiction at Flinders University. Anne's recent research found that although young Australians are engaging in risky drinking less than in previous years, older Australians are drinking alcohol at risky levels more and more. Professor Roach is my special guest today. What prompted you to do this research?
There'd been some preliminary indications that there were changes occurring with older people and their consumption of alcohol. So numbers of our services were indicating that they were seeing more people coming in for treatment for quite severe problems. And when we said, okay, well, let's have a look, start to look at the data on this, and Australia has quite good alcohol and drug epidemiological data that we've been collecting for some decades, so we can do very good trend analyses. So we started to look at the patterns and prevalence of both alcohol consumption in general, but also risky patterns of consumption, which is what we're particularly interested in. And what we have found is that there is a statistically significant increase in risky consumption of alcohol by people over 50 years of age.
Baby boomers.
That's right. It is pretty much attributed to differences in the baby boomer cohort. Yes.
Yes. What does alcohol do to older people that it doesn't do to younger people?
The really important differences, there's numbers of them. One is that as we age, we have less water in our bodies and we require water to metabolise alcohol. So one of the reasons when we're saying to people as a harm reduction mechanism, keep your water level up when you're drinking alcohol. It slows down the pace of consumption, so you're less likely to become intoxicated. It keeps the blood alcohol level relatively low. So you need water to metabolise alcohol. So we have less of that available, so we are more challenged in terms of our physiological ability to just simply manage alcohol. So that's the first consideration. But also, as we get older, we are much more likely to be on a range of other medications, so that these might be things for high blood pressure or a range of other things that are contraindicated in terms of consumption of alcohol, concurrent consumption of alcohol. And there's not good awareness of that, either by the general public or by most clinicians, so that there's a general sort of awareness of it. So that's a second consideration. Mm-hmm. There's a third and an important one, and that is that for older people, there's an increasing vulnerability and propensity for a range of adverse health effects, such as falls and lack of balance as you get substantially older, and alcohol is certainly going to potentially contribute to that. And then a fourth one is that there are psychosocial considerations. So whilst most of us would use alcohol to enhance socialising and to enhance mood and sort of to celebrate and so forth, very positive pro-social sorts of things, sometimes we also use alcohol in a way that helps to attempt to manage more negative states, and they might be things like loneliness or isolation, grief or bereavement, which occur more prominently in older age groups. And again, alcohol is really problematic if it's being used for those reasons, or it co-occurs with that. So there are multiple reasons why we're concerned. It's also it's a fairly toxic substance, and it's a major contributor to many of the health and harmful health challenges that we know that older people confront on a daily basis. So these are things like diabetes and cardiovascular disease and cancer, obesity, mental health, cognitive decline. So it contributes to a range of things. So that's about five pretty good reasons we have elevated levels of concern with older people.
Tell us a little bit about the design of your study.
Well, in Australia, we've been collecting really very good, reliable, nationally representative data on alcohol and drug use for about 25 years. So this is work that's overseen by the AIHW. They're the custodians of these data sets. And there's a very large survey that's done every 3 years. We have access to that data. Yep. And so the sample is usually around 20 to 25,000 people. But this is it's a randomised survey, but it's stratified, and it's a very carefully conducted and very carefully sampled survey that's undertaken so that we can then execute weightings so that we can confidently generalise to the whole population from the findings of that. Cool. So we look at these iterations of what's called the National Drug Strategy Household Survey, and there's multiple questions about people's demographics, who they are, their gender, their family structure, their living arrangements, their work arrangements, etc., etc., their health status, their mental health status, and questions about the range of substances that they consume, everything from tobacco and alcohol through to the range of illicit drugs through to pharmaceuticals and prescribed medications. So it's a very large, comprehensive survey. In Australia, we have drinking guidelines that are established by the NHNMRC, and I was on the last two committees of the NHNMRC where we established and where we revised those drinking guidelines. So that in our survey, what we looked at was that the abstainer category is straightforward. There are two levels of what we call low-risk drinking in the NHNMRC guidelines. One is if you're thinking in terms of long-term health, the development of long-term problems, cancer, heart disease and so forth, the guidelines say for both men and women, drink less than two drinks on a day or on average over a longer period of time. Once you get above that, we know that it increases the risk of developing this range of health problems. For short-term consumption, there's a whole range of short-term risks, which are quite different. And in that instance, we say once you start drinking more than five drinks in a session, you've increased the risk of incurring an adverse event that's associated with. So we've looked here specifically at short-term risky drinking, and you can look at it both ways. But here we're quite interested in the short-term consequences. And so the cut point there is that if you're drinking more than five drinks in a session, so that's how we've looked at the data.
Given that our population is ageing, so there are more older people, doesn't it therefore seem like a natural progression that therefore there'll be more risky drinkers?
Yes, you would think so. And that's one of the considerations. But we've looked at it both numerically and proportionally, and that taking that into consideration, we're still seeing, having accommodated that, accounted for that, we're still seeing an increase over and above the population increase. So even though the population is increasing, therefore we would expect to see larger numbers, people consuming different sorts of things. What we're seeing is an increase over and above what we're seeing just in terms of population numbers. It's important to note also that this is a pattern that's occurring in developed countries around the world. So it's not just unique to Australia.
What do you think it is about baby boomers? What characteristics do they have that makes them want to have a bit of a drink more than they should?
Well, I think there's numbers of things that are different for the baby boomer generation, which are the people born between 1946 and 1964, that differentiates them from their parents and grandparents. That we as a group are much more assertive, we're much more independent, we're much more hedonistic in many ways. So we've probably, again, in countries around the world, we've probably had the most comfortable lifestyle of generations that have preceded us. And as part of a lifestyle that we live, alcohol has tended to feature fairly or more predominantly than in previous generations. So our expectations of what our day-to-day existence is going to look like is now quite different to previous generations.
We're chatting today with Professor Anne Roach, Director of the National Centre for Education and Training on Addiction. Her co-authored research letter can be found at mja.com.au, where it is permanently open access. Back to our chat.
The expectation also is that we live longer and we live more healthily into older years than previously, and the expectation is that we will continue to live a full, vibrant, healthy lifestyle into our older years, and our core components of our lifestyle will continue, and that might include alcohol, where I think previously we probably saw more tapering off of alcohol consumption in previous generations for numbers of reasons. We have a group that we've described as being the maintainers. So these are people who would maintain their previous patterns of both alcohol and some illicit drug consumption, because that's the other phenomenon that we're also seeing. It's not just alcohol. So there is the group that we call the maintainers that continue this pattern into older years. But there's other things that are occurring as well. So one of them is about gender. So we're now seeing more women who are in their older years who are drinking alcohol than previously. And some of those are new initiates into alcohol, that they're moving into social environments like retirement villages where there might be a happy hour or more opportunities to socialise that may be associated with alcohol. So that there's a group who are actually taking up alcohol in a way that they hadn't done previously. We're seeing people who might have not lived as long as we are living now because of illness and unhealthy lifestyles and so forth, but through better health system support and medication and so forth, there's a group that we call the survivors. Mm. And so some of these people may have had previous alcohol problems but are now living much longer than previously. And we're certainly seeing that amongst people who are illicit drug users, that many of them are now living much, much older than we expected previously. And then there's a third group that we've called reactors. And so these are people that might be reacting in the way I described, people socialising more, changing their drinking behaviour, but there's a negative element to that as well. So and they're the ones that I'd flagged in terms of potentially using alcohol as a way of coping with negative changes in their lifestyle, the loneliness, isolation, grief, bereavement. There's a multitude of things that may be contributing to these patterns.
Are we good at caring for older drinkers?
No, we're not good at even identifying, let alone caring or supporting or intervening. Much of the research that's been conducted around the world around both alcohol and drug use has explicitly excluded people, say, over 55, but usually 60 or 65 in our studies. So we would put these, you know, quite rigid boundaries around our sampling frames and so forth. And so much of the evidence base that we work from to inform good quality care and interventions has specifically excluded older people. So we don't really have a strong evidence base about what constitutes a low risk or safe level. And we just know that it's lower than the wider population. But there has been work that's been done in Britain, for instance, where they've developed programs that were designed specifically to cater for the unique lifestyle and physiological needs of older people. And they've demonstrated very successful outcomes where that has been tried. Mm-hmm. We haven't done that yet in Australia. But we haven't really even tailored our screening instruments, our guidelines. We don't have a specific evidence-informed guideline about low-risk drinking for older people, as I say, other than knowing that it's less than that. And then there's a range of other challenges within our service responses and our service provision that traditionally we've thought in terms of alcohol and drug problems as being issues that manifest with relatively youngish people. Yeah. And over time, that age, the age bracket of concern has expanded and expanded. But now we're seeing younger people in Australia and elsewhere are demonstrating a statistically significant decrease in risky drinking. Yep. So their risky drinking is going down, and in the over 50s, it's going up. But our service delivery models and our support mechanisms have been designed to cater for the younger group, and we've not trained our health professionals very well to be well equipped and informed to be able to identify, to ask the kind of questions that are appropriate, and to give the kinds of feedback and support that's required, even if somebody's not dependent, but certainly perhaps drinking in an ill-advised way or potentially problematic way.
What role do GPs have in this, and are we educating them properly, and what do we need to do to make them more attuned to the older drinkers?
GPs have a tremendously important role in this area, but there's little evidence that we're providing much to guide them in the right direction around this. They would get very little exposure about dealing with alcohol and drug issues in general during their pre-service and post-registration training periods. But we know that this is crucially important. We have decades now of research that indicates that early intervention and brief intervention works extremely well. And that's equally applicable for older populations. So we know that can work very well. But people in a clinical setting have to be vigilant in terms of regular screening. So that means asking the right kind of questions. And we know from, there's a little bit of qualitative work that's been done that says that GPs are often a bit uncomfortable about asking these questions and can be quite uncomfortable about asking these questions of somebody that might be a little bit older, either their own age or a little bit older still. There's a reticence to ask potentially uncomfortable or embarrassing questions. So that's a second consideration. And there's also So an additional barrier is that there's a bit of a tendency to think, well, some of the presenting problems that somebody might be coming to see their GP for might be simply discounted as related to part of the ageing process, without even inquiring about drinking patterns and behaviours and considering that as a possibility. And further to that, there's sometimes a view that, well, people are older, they're not going to be able to change, or, you know, there's not much point in attempting to get them to change these kind of behaviours, and is it really going to do much harm? And so changing that mindset for clinicians is quite important, because, as I said a little while ago, that probably the sixth cardinal health area concern, so heart disease, cardiovascular disease for us, cancer, diabetes, obesity, mental health issues, alcohol will impact negatively, can impact negatively on all of those. And GPs really need to be vigilant and very comfortable about asking these questions about how much do you drink, and you know, are you aware that that might be contraindicated given these other circumstances for you? And so there are some other things that in general are important, that we know that across the board in Australia that there are likely to be higher levels of consumption and problematic use amongst people who live in rural Australia and remote areas. And that's true for tobacco, for alcohol, for illicit drugs. It's true for mental health. Their populations at higher risk in general. Yeah. And so from a GP's perspective, those that are based in country areas, to be even more aware of the possible negative consequences of that is really quite important. We've been doing separate public health promotions around being super cautious about alcohol in the hot weather, partly because of the dehydration factor and other risks associated with that. But weather does play an important part, as does isolation. And the other demographic that's changing demographic pattern is the increasing numbers of people that we know who are now living alone. We're looking at predictors. What does the data tell us about who are most likely to develop problematic patterns or patterns that we would be concerned with? And there's two groups. One is the married group, and that's maybe because they're doing more socialising together. And the other one are the people that live alone. For a GP, knowing if somebody does live alone, then it's even more important to ask these questions as well. Terrific. Okay, thanks, Kate. That's wonderful.
Thanks very much, Anne.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.